Houston's home for Texas A&M Athletics. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. KFNC and KFNC HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
You know, I think most people have heard that we don't really talk about separation. We certainly talk about teams in clusters. Cincinnati, one of the things we've talked about all year is that win at Notre Dame continues to look better with every passing week. And this past week, the win they had against SMU, came in 8-2, and Ritter just continues to show why he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Their defense is playing strong. So Cincinnati at 4, the committee felt strongly about not really comparing them to the Big 12 directly. We don't look at conferences as much as we're looking at team by team.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Well, welcome in, everybody. John and Dell. Dell filling in today. Art will be happy. Okay, you just made Art's day, okay, because Dell is back.
Well, my job is to make anonymous men I've never met happy.
I know, right. Yes. That is your job. Dell, a.k.a. Fred, a.k.a. of Fred.
I'm not going to play that game, the of Fred game, with you, because we talked about this last week, and you know what happens to handmates.
I understand.
One,
and I could certainly see Fred Davis and Fred Fowler.
Since you want to go there, which one is doing the holding down? And which one is?
I think it's probably Fred Davis holding down,
and then Fred Fowler's.
He's the
man in the situation. Well, the husband in the situation.
Yeah, he is the, what do they call them, the men? I forget.
Is he a commander?
The commander.
Okay,
Fred's the commander.
If you don't know anything about Handmaid's Tale, John is suggesting that the two Freds would forcibly make me do something.
Anyway, if you haven't watched Handmaid's Tale, you don't know what we're talking about. Handmaid's Tale, but here's the deal. Is if you have, it's awfully funny, because
if you have seen the show, I made a really funny joke.
If you haven't, oh well. Welcome in, everybody. John Adele along with Aaron, and off we go here. We got a busy show for you today. Greg Cosell is going to join us talking NFL, Pat 40 to talk college football. Dana Holgerson is going to join us early this week as they head to Connecticut to finish up the season. And then Five Star is going to give us his picks at 9:30. So we got a busy show for you. And we got Dell in sitting in the studio for Lance today because he's lazy.
Yeah, I heard Brad Kellner in here at the end of the show. Was it yesterday? And he talked about how he's a team player. I can't be any farther from that.
Right.
Yeah. Like if ESPN 975 made jerseys and he said he played for the name on the front and not the back, I definitely play for the name on the back.
You play for Olale.
You know how like those kids, like the shop car thing, they put a piece of tape on the back and then draw their name. So if you don't want to buy a new jersey, I would definitely cover up the Texans part of the jersey.
You and make sure the gal part
of the jersey, and definitely make sure my name and write Olale on the front, so it's on the front and the back of the jersey,
because you play for that name.
Yeah, I play,
and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, the family. Yes, name,
that's it.
Yeah,
so let me ask you a question, since you're working this morning now. So
yes.
See what you're saying is, see, Cody was here on Monday and he wasn't going to do the afternoon show because he did the morning show. Cody was like, I ain't doing that. I ain't doing all that. I ain't about that life.
Mm-hmm.
Brad comes in yesterday morning, and Brad goes and does the afternoon show as
well.
Team
player.
Now, you are going to do this show, so you're not going to work over on the sports map side.
That's not true.
So you're playing for the front, the name on the front.
No, let's be clear. Let's be clear. You texted me and asked me if I could do this, and I said, my initial reaction was, I'm not working a double. So I said, talk to whoever you need to talk to so I don't have to work two shifts. Turns out that did not get done. You did the talking to. It just didn't get confirmed. But I'm okay. I will be on from 12 to 3 on the Sports Map side. Me and Fred Davis continuing our little preview of Fred Nation, which comes on, which starts next week.
How are you going to get your nap in?
There's a car, and I put a pillow down there
there's
in the
a,
car.
There's a pillow in the car?
Definitely, there's a pillow in the car.
Always, never leave home without your pillow.
Hey, a nap is important, John.
No, oh, trust me. But I'll be napping and not getting up and doing the show.
Yeah, I got to nap, get up and do a show, and then...
But I got to drive.
Where are you going? Oh, Louisiana.
Lafayette. Yeah. So anyway, we got Dell to finish up the holiday season here with Lance. And then... So we
Lance
got
is
the
in
show.
The building, by the way.
But he was here late yesterday, too.
He was. I walked in coming into work, and he was limping around in a boot. I was like, what are you doing here? He's in the building by before noon.
What is he doing?
I guess he's doing that whole grading prospect
who
thing.
Who
I don't care, but apparently he does.
Young man's hips? Is that what he's doing?
The flexibility of their hips is part of his deal. Yeah.
No, it's very important to Lance how flexible these young men are in the hip area. I know. I'm like, Lance, what are you doing here? If you're not going to be here, beat it. Beat it, Lance.
It's a little odd to see him walking around while he's not doing his actual job.
Now, don't forget, he does have a bunch of kids at home.
I get why you wouldn't want to be at home, but, you know, go staycation someplace else besides work.
Yeah.
Why are you at staycation at work?
Go to a bar
or something.
And drink your vodka tonics or whatever you drink while you're looking at young men's hips.
There are a number of movies you could be at, and instead you're just hanging out at work. Okay.
Terrible. What a terrible life he leads. We got the college football playoff rankings yesterday. You agree? Disagree?
It was what they had to do. I mean, I guess there's some thought that if you wanted to, you could have put Michigan at 4 because Michigan and Ohio State have to play each other anyway, so it wouldn't matter for Cincinnati. But this is what they had to do. I would say they're kind of backed into a corner with the Oregon loss and certainly Michigan State and their couple losses the last 2 out of 3 weeks. So what else were they going to do? The question, we had a bit of a talk before the show. You were a bit upset with me because I came in later than you would have liked.
You walked in at 6:55.
I don't work here.
Just get your ass in here.
I don't work.
Pre-show. We got pre-show meetings here.
I don't work
for
the show.
We sit down. We work out every segment before we go on the air, okay? That's how the show goes now.
No, that's how the Killer Bees go. No, I'm not joking. That's how it goes. Yeah, it's segmented. And Jeremy does a great job planning the show.
Well, we've got it broken down into segments. Let me take a look at what's in here today, Aaron.
I see an empty grid.
Nothing and this nothing, nothing in any segment except news of the weird at the end.
Well,
that's it.
That's always the standard.
Aaron filled all those in. No, and by all of them, I mean none of them. Okay. Well, here's the thing: is they could have put Michigan 4.
Yeah,
they can't put Notre Dame ahead of Cincinnati because Cincinnati went and won there. I think Oklahoma State's the wild card. I think Alabama's going to lose to Georgia. If they don't, now we got a problem.
A real
because
problem.
If Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma and beats Baylor, you can absolutely make the argument. Should Cincinnati get through these 2 weeks? You could definitely make the argument that the road for Oklahoma State was much tougher. They did have the loss at Iowa State, but they could bypass Cincinnati.
Yeah, the most important game of Cincinnati season, besides, you know, the ones they actually have to play, is the Alabama-Georgia game.
Yeah.
You don't need Alabama mucking it up, and they're very capable of doing it. So you need the Georgia win to happen no matter how it happens. So Alabama's removed from the equation, and then you can say, you can probably breathe pretty comfortably, Big Ten champion, Georgia, yourself, and if it's Oklahoma State, the Big 12 champion, then you're fine. Then you're in, and then seeding will become a deal. But you don't care at that point because you're in the playoff.
I think that let's say that they do. That's how it happens. Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma and then Baylor, and even if it's rather convincingly or whatever the case may be, it would be Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma State at 3, and Cincinnati at 4.
Would the committee take into account that those two teams played in a bowl game last year? Georgia and Cincinnati?
No, I don't think they would. Okay. I don't think so. I don't think they would. I don't think they care about that. What they wouldn't do, okay, if Alabama beats Georgia, they won't match up Alabama and Georgia in the semifinal.
No, they would raise Alabama to maybe 1 from, what are they, 3 now?
Yeah.
And they drop Georgia to 2 or 3, and then it'd be Ohio State, Georgia.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That they would. Yeah, because if they put Ohio State up there, now Ohio State beating beaten Michigan, if they beat them soundly, which, by the way, 7.5, that is scary. And it's so scary, I took it. I took Ohio State. How in the world is Ohio State only a 7.5-point favorite over Michigan?
Considering the history, considering what they just did to a Michigan State team who beat Michigan. Michigan's, I think, despite the loss and, you know, the head-to-head certainly means something, is a better team than Michigan State. They're more talented, and they controlled that game for the most part until it got away from them in the fourth quarter. But credit to Michigan State for winning. But until proven otherwise, all I have is visions of Ohio State receivers running by Michigan corners. And until that changes, I don't know how you give it a 7.5 number. Well, I know they have two great pass rushers that can possibly change the game if Ohio State can't protect. We know that can happen. But until I see it, it feels like that's at least a 2-touchdown, 17-point game until proven otherwise. If not more, considering how the history is.
What were they last week, 17 over Michigan State?
I don't remember the number, but they covered clearly.
Oh, no, they obviously covered, but I think they were 17. How is it that Michigan's 7.5? I mean,
well,
now it's 8.5 because the bettors have said, oh, really, 7.5?
Well, the game's in Ann Arbor, so that has something to do with the difference of the number, but even still,
Ohio State is a juggernaut right now. C.J. Stroud, is he the Heisman?
He has the opportunity this week, and then if he wins, and then they'll face a strong Wisconsin defense as well, most likely in the Big Ten title game. But, you know, Bryce Young doesn't have a great opponent this week. Auburn may be on the verge of getting rid of their coach a year in. We'll see. Brian Harsin. But you have the best defense we've seen in a very long time on the schedule. If he lights up Georgia, I think that kind of evens the score. Because he went for 500 against Arkansas. He puts up another 350, 400 against Auburn, and then he goes for 300-plus against Georgia. How do you deny that man a potential Heisman?
I don't know why he's getting – he appears – Bryce Young appears to be getting shunned by – because he does – he's got stupid numbers. He has had lulls in his season, though.
Yeah, and I think some of it is being tired of promoting an Alabama quarterback. I mean, everybody gets weary of that. Now, I mean, if it's not an Alabama quarterback, it's going to be an Ohio State quarterback. But we're going to have a coach on who might be looking to promote a multi-purpose athlete, at least positional athlete, a little bit later in the show. We've seen Dana talk about his player who should be up for the Heisman. We've seen others talk about another Alabama player in Will Anderson. This is the year to promote a non-offensive player. I don't know if the voters are going to care, though.
Jordan Davis will finish the highest.
Jordan Davis, probably. Maybe Will Anderson because he's a pass rusher at Alabama. That might be the case. Well, Marcus Jones won't have people's eyes on him this week, but in the AAC title game, if he has a big one, I don't know if that'll be enough, but it will certainly be something people should be paying attention to.
Yeah. Is he even in the Thorpe Award?
For best defensive back? I don't know if he made the semifinal or the final.
Yeah, I don't
either. Semifinalist or finalist list.
We got to find out. If he's not even in that, is there a returner award? There must be.
There has to probably a special team award. I'm sure there has to be something.
There has to be something.
Specialist award.
There's an award for everything. So 712 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to get in and talk to Dell, okay, this is the last time you'll ever be able to talk to him.
Well, this year. On this station. Right. Actually, no, there's still more college football to talk about, I think. You might have me on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
don't get to call in and talk to you.
Well, I would welcome calls. I know. Well, Marcus Jones, not a Thorpe Award finalist. There is a Texas, or at least a player who plays in Texas, Jalen Petrie from Baylor, Verone McKinley, and Kobe Bryant from Cincinnati. So, but no Marcus Jones for your Thorpe Award.
Yeah. So, I don't know about the Heisman, Dana. I'm not sure. I don't think he's garnering enough. Certainly, there's not enough sympathy out there, or at least enough advertising for him to get that award. 712 ESPN 97.5. If you want to get in, 713-78. You got any thoughts on the college football playoff? You agree, disagree? You're more than welcome. 713-780-3776.
Dinner, gobble, gobble, gobble.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Come and get it while it's hot.
From ESPN 97.5. Found the Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97. I was just watching Chet Holmgren throw one down.
Okay. Future Rocket Chet Holmgren?
Could well. Boy, Kevin Durant thinks his arms are too skinny.
Yeah. When I was still a part of the...
Who's got lighter legs,
no,
Kevin Durant or Chet
Holmgren?
You
want to explain that to people? Kevin Durant's not had a great week. Kevin Durant, you know, he's a guy who wears, like, the tights and almost down to his socks. But there was a little sliver of his skin exposed around his ankle, and it looked like he had grayscale, if you're a Game of Thrones fan. Let's just say he was ashy, but he wasn't just ashy. It was cracked ashy.
Yeah.
And
it looked like it was a net.
Yeah, and the internet had all the jokes.
Oh, my gosh.
And he tweeted out something along the lines of, I'm about to go.
Bleep, y'all.
What he was about to say was, he pretty much said, I'm about to go how much money y'all got.
Yeah.
And F y'all because of how crazy people, and he should have just left it alone because everyone quote tweeted him saying, I may be broke, but I know where to buy lotion. That's pretty much the gist of all the tweets.
Well, and I don't know. You know how thin skinned he is, but it seemed like it was good hearted. Maybe.
Yeah.
But there were so many good, the tree walking. And
his skin looked like he was an int from Lord of the Rings. This is his tweet. I'm about to pull my y'all broke card in a second. F y'all. And then that just led to all the cold tweets about, I may be broke, but I know what aloe vera is. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because he looks like it was not a great look for Kevin Durant.
No.
I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's not good.
But. Being ashy ain't good.
That's worse than ashy, though.
No,
it's not just ashy. It's like cracked and dry. And
he looks like he's got some kind of skin disease.
Yeah, it looks like he's got grayscale.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he does.
Maybe he needs Sam to cure him like Sam cured Jorah.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Maybe he needs a dragon. I don't know. Okay. Maybe he is. Maybe that's why his skin's so. Maybe he is a. Are you going to watch the.
Course, I have to give it another shot.
Are you on Dope Sick yet?
I saw that. I'm not sure about the opioid crisis being something I want to lean into, but you said it's good.
It's really good.
I like some of the
Michael
actors.
Keaton is really good.
I like some of the actors, and I think the girl that's featured in the trailer, I like some of the stuff she's been in. She was in blanking on the movie now, but she's been in some good stuff too. So I'll eventually get to it. I'm just the opioid crisis thing. I'm like,
it's it's revealing how this the Stackler family, is it Stackler, whatever it is, Stackler family. Wow, it is revealing. It really is, and you'll be like, you'll shake your head. How in the world did they do this? Is the stream working? We got a complaint about the stream. It should be fine. Somebody said they're trying to silence Dell. Management's trying to silence Dell right now. I could see that.
You think they need? You think they haven't taken enough steps?
Every step that they've taken.
How many more steps can they take?
So yesterday, in that game that Chet Holmgren was in, it's Gonzaga and UCLA. By the way, Gonzaga's way better. Gonzaga just boat raced him. But it was the return of Dick Vitale. And Dick Vitale, fighting cancer at the age of 82, was able to, and they gave him a standing ovation when he came on the court, which is really cool. I mean, I think I would have, that kind of stuff, I love that kind of stuff. And Dick Vitale at the beginning, at the open of the game, here's Dick Vitale talking about being there, and you can tell the emotion in his voice.
Thanks so much for being with us, everyone. I'm Dave O'Brien, Sean Farnham with us as well tonight. Dickie, it is so great to see. I know you would not miss this. All of you are aware that Dick is battling cancer. The fact that you've made it out to Las Vegas for a game that I know you had circled for a long, long time is just awesome. Great to see you.
Great being here, Dave. I didn't want to cry. I can't believe I'm sitting here. This is really a big thrill for me. I want to thank all you people. Sent me so many great messages. ESPN, Jimmy Pitaro, all my buddies at ESPN. I want to thank certainly my family and all the fans. My, you've been unbelievable. On October 12th, I'll be honest with you, when they walked in and told me I had cancer, they thought it was mild duct cancer. And it was really going to be a serious surgery and all. I never dreamt that 82 I'll ever be on courtside again. But to be here today, I'm sorry. I hope I don't cause a problem out there. But I'm being so emotional.
Don't apologize for anything.
Well, and the game is the big thing. Well, let's get this game going. Talk some basketball, really.
That's awesome. That's a great. He is on the Mount Rushmore, no question, of college basketball and what he's meant to the game. So that was pretty. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that Dick Vitale was able to get back. And then the games, and you had, you know, Gonzaga just taking care of that business. The Cougs played yesterday, fell behind by 20 to Wisconsin, fought their way back, and should have had a shot at the end. They didn't get it off, but lose by 2. It was good to see them fight like that. But that's a game that you hope, well, as far as rankings go, I don't know what that means, whatever the case may be, because here's what the AAC is going to come down to: Memphis and Houston.
Yeah, Memphis, supremely talented this year. In fact, they went so far as to get multiple kids to reclassify to get them eligible to play this year, like Jalen Duren and Amani Bates, two guys who actually were supposed to be in next year's class, reclassified to play this year. So they had an influx of talent. Don't they have like Larry? Who do they have on their staff? Is it Larry Brown? There's an established older coach on their staff. Penny Hardaway is the head coach. It'll come down to those two. It'll be the flash of Memphis and the young guys against what the program that Kevin, I always say Kevin, Kelvin Sampson has built. Yeah, that'll be a couple big games, and maybe they'll see each other three times this year.
It's but that was good to see that the Cougs fought back and not get blown out, because the last time we saw them in a big game, they did get blown out. That was by Baylor, which ended up winning the national championship. Was a pretty good basketball team who blew out not only them, but blew out Gonzaga as well. So this was a nice game, nice comeback. Unfortunately, they came up short. It is good to see Tremont Mark back, but he only played 14 minutes. When he starts to get back into it and he's able to get his legs going, and Tremont Mark, he's going to make a big difference for this basketball team and make it even deeper. But yeah, Marcus Sasser didn't have a great shooting game, just 4-12, 3-7 from 3. Edwards is pretty good. Kyler Edwards is a pretty good shooter. At least he was yesterday. So this is a pretty good basketball team. Unfortunately, they lost. 724 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Another big story yesterday coming out: Kendall Graveman. Kendall Graveman signs with the White Sox on a 3-year guaranteed deal. That's a big. I guess I don't know why I just assumed that he was going to come back. He got a big deal, $8 million a year.
Yeah, when you go on these type of runs, you just assume guys would want to stay, but who knows what the Astros offered. I don't know. I mean, did they see him as only a half a year rental, or did they think he was in their long term plans? Or maybe they thought to themselves, yeah, that's a little rich for Kendall.
It was a little rich.
So we're not gonna go there. Sorry, John, I'm more of a National guy now, so I see it from the White Sox perspective.
What did you think of the White Sox?
I mean, it's a credit to the White Sox. I mean, didn't have the year they really wanted to last year, and it's a nice move to bolster that bullpen. It's a bullpen that needed the help. Now, hopefully Kendall Graveman didn't cry like he did when Seattle traded him. You think he was more joyous when he signed the deal with the White Sox?
Because he wasn't traded. He signed of his own free will.
I just hope he didn't cry again, because that seems to be his thing when he moves to different teams.
Well, here's the deal, is they're paying him a lot of money, and Hendricks is the closer. I mean, he's not even going to close. He's the setup guy. But, you know, they had Michael Kopech, who they hate. Can I tell you how much they hate Michael Kopech in Chicago? This is the guy that throws 108 miles an hour. And yet they just think he just is terrible. I mean, in the crowd, when he comes into the game, everybody's, oh! Yeah.
We had a couple guys like that here.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no question we've had guys like that here. And they want to pair. They like to pair. And so that's a pretty good bullpen. The White Sox trying to bolster. They're trying to get the job done. They need some more help, though. They got other stuff that they need to do.
Michael Kopech married to a Hollywood actress, so I can see why he might be a little distracted.
Who did he marry?
He's married to some woman named Vanessa Morgan. She's been on, I mean, you would say she's going good, I think. That's how you describe things. I mean, there's a kid there, but you would say she's going good.
Oh, yeah, she's doing pretty good. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I'm just saying I can understand.
Michael Kopech's living a good life.
I can understand why he may not be great.
Right.
He may not be great from appearance to appearance. He's busy doing stuff.
Is that his kid?
I think so. He has a kid named River, and I believe the child in the picture I showed you is his. Yes, they've been married for a little bit. So I get why things may not be going well out in the field.
He's
doing other stuff.
Yeah, he's busy. I can't blame him. He's really, really busy right now. And good for him. Good for him.
You know, it's not going to last. It's the first marriage, though.
Yeah, no. There's zero chance that lasts. Is it a mixed marriage?
What do you mean?
She's
team light skin.
Yeah, she is team light skin, but it appears that, so, I mean, she's shorter, she's smaller.
Yeah, she's older and shorter.
She's older and shorter. Yeah, but he's living a good life.
I credit Michael Kopech for getting that done.
Yeah, no.
I don't blame him. Look, you can throw 108 and be wild and give up hits and home runs, but I understand you got different priorities.
Yeah, go get it, son.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Look, trust me, I'd be distracted too.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Oh, that fired off again before it was supposed to. Sorry, I got other things to worry about.
sorry, Sox fans. Gotta go.
Things to do.
Got stuff waiting. 7:27. Greg Cosell's waiting to join us on the other side, so we'll talk NFL football with the great Greg Cosell. Don't you go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. Time to talk some NFL with NFL Film's own Greg Cosell on the bench from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
Welcome back. He's early because we're not going to be here Thursday or Friday, so Greg Cosell joining us today. John and Dell with you today, Greg, to talk a little NFL football. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
John, what's happening? Obviously, it's Wednesday, John, so, you know, I can't have seen quite as much footage as I normally do by the time we do it on Friday, but, you know, we'll make it work. You know, we'll fool them this week.
Well, absolutely. I fool them every week. I ain't breaking it down like you do, Greg. I promise you. But okay, so let me ask you this question. Did you suffer through the Texans game at all? Did you happen to catch any of that?
I actually watched their defense against the Titans offense. That side of the ball I did watch.
What did you – well, listen, after last year, that was one of the worst defenses in NFL history. So to be picking up five more turnovers in back-to-back games for the Houston Texans defense, that's not too bad.
No. And, you know, it's funny because unrelated to the Texans, and we can just get to that in a sec, but I finished watching that tape and I said to myself that Adrian Peterson really can't play anymore, that he just runs to get tackled. So, of course, after I watched the tape, he gets cut. So I guess the Titans kind of noticed that too.
Yeah.
It was actually a really interesting game because the Titans are in a little bit of trouble offensively, and I've been talking about this for a number of weeks. They've only had three 20-plus yard pass plays in their last three games, okay? One was a screen to Dante Foreman. Another was a throw to Marcus Johnson. That was a 5-yard throw that he happened to run. They have no big play ability offensively right now, and their defense is playing really well, but they're really kind of tough to watch on offense.
No, absolutely. That losing Derrick Henry makes that big a difference, although they were going along okay because the defense was carrying them, but you're right. How much of it was the Texans scheming or whatnot, or was it just Tannehill being bad?
I think that again, I never know if a team is surprised by what another team does or not. You know, that then you have to ask the team. But the Texans played more snaps of cover one, man coverage, in this game than I would have expected based on what they had done this season. In fact, cover one was their most played coverage on third down, which is something we've not seen much of this season. So as I said, that's something different. I can't tell you if that was a surprise or not. You know, obviously, Tannehill made some throws that were truly surprising. I mean, that first interception by Gruje Hill, where I think Gruje Hill and Cunningham initially showed as in the A-gaps in that double mug front, and then they just dropped back. But all they did was really drop back into a zone concept. It was cover six, a split safety concept. You'd have to ask Tannehill, but I was really surprised he did not see him because he threw that ball with no awareness at all that Gruje Hill was there.
So if the Titans fall behind, Tannehill is a game manager. He's not a guy that can carry a team, is he?
Well, you know, it's funny. That conversation's been had by a lot of people. I'm talking about smart, reasonable people, coaches over the years, as to what Tannehill is. And since he came in from Mariota a couple of years ago and has played, for the most part, very, very well, obviously in an offense whose foundation is clearly Derrick Henry, you know, people weren't quite sure if Tannehill was simply a sort of a function of that style of offense or if he was more. I don't think we have a large enough sample size to know that for sure. They've also been missing a lot of their receivers. Who knows what Julio Jones' status will be as the year progresses. A.J. Brown has been in and out of the lineup. I tend to evaluate quarterbacks in a vacuum. It's not who's playing with them can be important. I mean, clearly, the three receivers who played the most snaps in this game for the Titans were a rookie Fitzpatrick, Chester Rogers, and Westbrook Ahene. Those were the three receivers who played the most snaps. So, obviously, you're very weak at your wide receiver position. But this was a game where Tannehill just did not see things. And, again, you'd have to ask him why, but he just did not see simple, basic things.
Greg, you mentioned how you evaluate quarterbacks, and Jason Garrett lost his job yesterday. Maybe not all because of what happened on Monday, but I'm sure it didn't help the cause. Is there something, from what you've seen from the Giants, is there something clearly wrong with the design of that offense, or is that more a player issue along with the game plan?
Yeah, now I always struggle with that. You know, I think people, you know, it's like play calling. I never talk about play calling. I never talk about game planning because you have to be there every day in the meetings to know those kinds of things. So I can't speak to, you know, whether there's something wrong with the design of the offense. You know, most teams do a lot of the same things. You know, obviously it's when you do it in given games, those kinds of things, but most teams run a lot of the same route concepts. You know, Daniel Jones is a quarterback I've probably not seen quite as much this year as some other quarterbacks. I thought after his rookie year he was on his way to being a good player. I think he's got the talent to be a good player. I don't know what it is, and I'm being totally honest. I don't know why it's not happened. Now, again, that's a team this year that really has not been able to play with the players they wanted to play with for probably 98% of the year. So that's a hard question to answer. But you know how it goes. There's always a scapegoat. I can't say whether Jason Garrett did a good or a bad job, but most teams do run most of the same things.
Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Greg, we got a lot of Cowboy fans in the city of Houston. Can you please tell them why their team stinks now?
Well, I don't know if the team stinks. I actually think they have a really good defense, which will be very interesting as the year goes forward. I did watch that tape this week. I did watch their offense against the Chiefs defense. And, you know, it's really interesting. I got the sense watching the tape that the Cowboys were playing offense to compensate and camouflage for what they believed was their O-line weakness versus the Chiefs defensive front. That was the sense I got watching the tape. Steele played again at left tackle. He played very, very well at right tackle. He's not played well at all at left tackle. In fact, he's been a liability. McGovern played left guard in this game, and he really struggled. It was one of those games, and this is a feel thing, but when I'm watching the tape, it was one of those games where the Cowboys' offense had no sense of rhythm to it whatsoever. They didn't really attempt to run the ball with any kind of commitment. Again, you'd have to ask them why they didn't do that, but they didn't. So, you know, I don't know why they didn't do that. Their passing game was very, very condensed. And, of course, they did not have Cooper, and then they lost a Lamb at the end of the first half. You know, you can say what you want about the Chiefs. Their defense has actually played a lot better over the last month. But they're a hard defense to play against because there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of man coverage. They play snaps of zero coverage. There's a lot of disguise and late movement. So they're a difficult defense tactically to play against. And the Cowboys never got a feel for how to attack them. But I still think they're a really good team, and I guess we'll see. They play tomorrow, obviously.
Greg, the Bills have lost 3 out of 5, and they've lost to an awful team in the Jags. They've lost to a pretty good team in the Titans. They've lost to a team coming on in the Colts this last weekend. If you could point to what their biggest issue going forward, particularly now that they're trailing the Patriots in the division, what do you think is the biggest issue with the Bills currently?
I think they have two issues, and they're both on offense, that then relate to a third issue. Number one, I don't think that they have any viable run game or any commitment to running the football. And number two, because they don't have that and they throw so much, I don't think their offensive line is good enough to pass protect 40 to 45 snaps every game. And then the result of that becomes that the quarterback has to be great on every single snap and every single play, every single quarter, every single game. And if he's not great, they can't win. So we'll see as they go forward, because they have a very good defense, clearly. Obviously, they did not have their best defensive performance this week, but they've got a very good defense. But there's no run game, and the O-line is problematic. So it becomes every game is a Josh Allen game, and that's just too hard. And I think Josh Allen is arguably the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL, but that's just too hard to play that way.
Just 11 carries by the running backs this week. That's ridiculously low.
Yes, and that's kind of somewhat normal, by the way. That is not out of the ordinary for them. Last couple of weeks, they've tried to go under center a bit more. They've tried to play more out of base personnel. It worked exceptionally well against the Jets. You could say it's the Jets and they're bad. That's fine, but it worked exceptionally well against the Jets. This week, they started the game that way, and I don't know if they got spooked by the fact that they fell behind 14-0, but then they totally got out of it. So we'll see. I mean, they play, obviously, tomorrow night in New Orleans against the Saints, a team, theoretically, that they should be able to hold down from a scoring perspective, because the Saints are likely, again, to be without their two starting tackles, Kamara. Obviously, it's a backup quarterback. So theoretically, the Bills' defense should be able to keep the game together, and we'll see what the Bills do offensively. And by the way, the final point about the Bills is if you're going to play this way, you need explosive pass plays. That's been lacking this year. Last year, they got explosive pass plays pretty much every week. This year, they have not. So they don't really have an ability to sustain offense.
Well, we know, obviously, philosophically, they want the ball in Josh Allen's hand. But is it because the offensive line isn't good at run blocking, or is it because they don't have the feature back? And look at Jonathan Taylor, 35 touches this week. 35. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
You know, feature back is a relative term. I mean, obviously, the Bills don't have Jonathan Taylor or any of, or that kind of back. But, they do have Singletary and Moss. Moss was a third-round pick. Moss was a volume runner in college, as you probably remember. I think you can have a run game with those backs. You don't need a big, big-time special back to have a viable run game. But the point is they don't run it at all. That's the thing.
Oh, absolutely. Greg Cosell, he's got another segment with us. We're talking NFL football right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now, though, how about some basketball? How about your team? How about your Rockets? I know they got one win this season, but they could. What if they pick it up? Oh, do you want to be there? Of course you want to be there. You got to be there for this next win. And look, it could be this week. And if you're looking for something to do this weekend with the whole family after Thanksgiving and your Black Friday shopping, bring the whole family out to Toyota Center on Saturday night to see the Rockets take on the Hornets. This is possibly a win here, people. They've got the Bulls tonight. And they've got the Hornets on Saturday night. You can receive 4 tickets for the Saturday game. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 drinks for as low as $99. That's for all 4, $99. The perfect way to finish your Thanksgiving weekend with the family. What are you going to do with them? Are you going to go to what? You're going to go to the Space Center or something like that? No. I had to do that yesterday. No, don't do that. Go to the Rockets game with them. Get your Rockets Thanksgiving Family Pack Special today at Rockets.com. That's Rockets.com.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. We got Greg Cosell with us for another segment here as we head into the Thanksgiving weekend. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Greg, and you and yours, by the way. We appreciate you being here, taking going early, usually on Friday. So Greg said he would do it today so that we wouldn't miss a beat. Let's talk. You mentioned these Chiefs.
Yeah.
Are they totally back, or are we seeing? Well, I know we're seeing signs of them getting back, but they jumped out on the Cowboys and then nothing for almost three quarters.
Yeah, well, I think their offense has settled into, you know, maybe what it should be now as they work their way back. It's very difficult. Look, we've become so used to Patrick Mahomes making all these special plays, which are outside of the structure of the offense. He may be the best in the league at that, and there's no question he's really gifted physically. But it's very hard to live like that over a long period of time. So they had a stretch this year where that wasn't working as much, and they didn't really have much to fall back on. The structure of the offense was not working. So now they're back in the structure of the offense, trying to run the ball a little bit more. Mahomes is playing, I think, with a lot more pocket poise. You're not seeing as much unnecessary movement by Mahomes, both inside the pocket and outside the pocket. So I think it'll all start to come together as they continue to do this, and he'll still make those special second reaction plays at times, but that can't be your offensive foundation. That can't be what you count on every week in order to put up big plays and points. So even though they're not necessarily putting up the points and the big numbers the last couple of weeks, even though I think they've now won, is it four in a row? Whatever it is, they're winning games. I think their team has a more efficient look to it. And then you build upon that, and they'll be fine. Because Mahomes is obviously gifted. He's obviously smart. So he just went through a stretch where he was playing so much outside the structure of the offense that it's too hard to do that.
Greg, sticking with the Chiefs, they try to rebuild their offensive line, but according to one metric, they're second in most pressures allowed. Only the Dolphins have more, and the Dolphins have the worst offensive line in football. Do you attribute the pressures more to Mahomes and his want to hold the football, or is their offensive line not playing to level people expected them to play?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways, Dale. Number one, first of all, I think that O-line is built more to be a run-blocking O-line with the players they have. Number two, and I hate to get into these conversations because I know there are so many companies that do all this kinds of work, but pressure to me is a relative thing. I need to see those plays because there's, you know, sometimes, and I don't know what particular metric is being used, but pressure to me is not just some metrics say, well, if there's a player within 2 yards of the quarterback, well, that's not necessarily pressure. So I need to see those plays. And then you need to see why there's pressure. Is there pressure because Mahomes had a throw and didn't throw it? Is there pressure because it's truly pressure? In other words, an offensive lineman got beat quick. You know, we have to find out on given plays what pressure, what that really means. Because there's one metric that there's one thing they still don't have a metric for. Maybe they'll get to it at some point, but I don't know if they will. And that's, there's no metric for balls that should be thrown that aren't. And I can't tell you how many times when I watch tape, I see that. I see balls that should be thrown that aren't, and then all of a sudden the quarterback is quote-unquote under pressure, you know, has to leave the pocket or get sacked, and I'm sure that's defined as he's under pressure, but that's not pressure. So, you know, those kinds of metrics, I'm always a little leery of those things.
Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. What would you make of the Baker-Mayfield situation in Cleveland?
Yeah, he's been very up and down. I expected him to be better. You know, there's just, and I hate to use this word because it's thrown around, an inconsistency to his game. There are times he just doesn't see it the way he should be seeing it at this advanced, experience stage. I mean, he's played enough snaps now where he should be seeing it quicker, and sometimes he does. And then every once in a while he makes a great throw because he's actually a very good thrower of the football. But he's just, and he's in an offense to me that leads to efficiency and should produce efficiency for the quarterback. in many ways, is in the exact same offense that Kirk Cousins is in Minnesota. And one can say whatever they want about Kirk Cousins, but he's extremely efficient in that offense. So Baker has not reached that point, and only they can decide if he's going to reach that point or if they feel like they need to go elsewhere. We're going to find that out, obviously, at some point. But he has not improved in the way I expected him to.
Which Colts team is the one that we should be looking at, the early season or the one that we're watching now?
Well, I think the early season you have to push aside. I'm not saying they're a great, great team, but Wentz did not play in the preseason at all. He missed a ton of practice time. So I think you have to kind of push all that aside. This is a team clearly that's moved toward being built on the run. You still have to make throws. Actually, Wentz made a couple of really good throws this week, which, you know, people look at his numbers and feel like, oh, yeah, he didn't matter in the game because he was 11 for 20 for 106 yards. But he made a couple of really good throws on third down that were important. We'll see as they go forward. But I think they have a defined way in which they want to play on offense. And I think that's always important. You know who you are. You know how you want to play. And they still have some big playability in the pass game. Hilton is back. Pittman is coming on as a very good receiver. So I think their offense is interesting. The question will be their defense, because they've had some issues in the secondary. They're playing with two backup safeties, which I think it'll be for pretty much the rest of the season. And at corner, they've had a lot of injuries. So that's a potential issue if they happen to have to get into some shootouts.
Greg, the Cardinals are 9-2, best record in the league, won two out of the last three without Kyler Murray as their starter. If you're looking at the Cardinals, what would you consider their greatest strength? Because certainly I think the record is a surprise to most people.
Yeah, and I think they've been fortunate a little bit. I mean, they just beat Seattle, which is a team that's really, really struggling. I think they're a pretty solid team. I got to tell you, I think Cliff Kingsbury, and it's probably gone under the radar because Kyler Murray, you know, when he's played up to this point, has obviously played well and improved meaningfully from his first 2 years in the league. But I think they do a lot of good things on offense. You know, obviously he came into this league as an air raid guy, and a lot of people believing that style of offense could not be effective. But he has expanded that a lot. This is way more than just an air raid. They do a really good job the way they use their personnel. They've started to use much more motion this year. I think Rondell Moore is probably responsible for that, because the air raid at its core does not use motion. But they've used a lot more this year. Even when I've watched Cliff Kingsbury, his offense the first 2 years, I thought he did a really good job with his route concepts and combinations, attacking at the vertical and deeper levels. He just has a really good feel to me for offensive design. And Murray's been so much better this year from the pocket, much more consistent with his accuracy. His ball placement his first 2 years was really lacking at times. And this year it's been much, much better.
Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And finally, let's finish up with the Patriots. Mac Jones could he have found a better situation than going with Josh McDaniels and having this defense and everything that's come to fruition for him and this Patriots team this year?
Well, here's the thing that's totally overlooked about the Patriots, and Mac Jones has played perfectly fine. This is no knock on Mac Jones, but they're a running football team. They're among the NFL leaders in rushing attempts, and Jones is not part of the run game because he's not a running quarterback. You know, so that is totally overlooked because everything is Mac Jones. And like I said, he's played well. This is no knock on him. But their team is built on the run game and on defense. And Mac Jones is an executor, and he executes at an extremely high level. But this team and this offense is not built on Mac Jones. They are a running football team and a defensive football team.
Absolutely. Well, they're pretty balanced. 349 attempts for Jones and 310 rushes. It doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, Harris and Stevenson have combined for 210 carries. I mean, you know, obviously they don't have that one back, which is another reason why people don't think of them as a rushing team, John, because they don't have that guy. But, you know, they've combined for 210 carries.
Greg, John won't ever ask you this because he doesn't really care about people. He just wants to use you for your football knowledge. I care about people, and I'm interested in what do you do to cleanse the palate? I know football expert, we ask you these questions. You have all these answers. Like on a Friday night, are you tuning in to what's streaming on Netflix or Hulu? What do you do to, like, kind of get away?
During the season, that's hard. I mean, in the off season, I'm a big reader of books. I'm a big reader of novels. I probably read 50 books between, like, February 1st and August 15th. You know, I'll stream some shows. I mean, this past year, I guess when COVID hit, I started to stream a lot more shows. I was never a huge TV watcher, Dell, but, you know, I started to do that, you know, just, you know, shows that you can really get into. But no, but in the off season, I probably read a ton. That's what I like to do.
Well, he wouldn't fit in here.
No.
You don't read.
Are you a Coors Light guy or a crappy beer guy? Which one?
You know what? I don't like beer.
You don't like beer?
I'm not really a drinker. I don't like and it's not a moral thing. I just don't like the taste of alcohol very much at all. And I don't really like the taste of beer.
I guess we know who's not hanging out with you, John.
That's where we differ, Greg. You and I, that's where we can't get along, okay? Greg Cosell, happy Thanksgiving. And to you and yours, Greg, and thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again next Friday.
All right, same to you guys. Really appreciate it. All thanks.
Right, there's Greg Cosell joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I didn't know about him. Now I've got
now you got some
back.
Questions?
Now I got in the
now
back of my
now you're never
going to
forget that he doesn't like the taste of alcohol. Sorry, I changed things for you.
You what? No, he doesn't. He's not a gambler either. He and I have nothing in common. Greg Cosell.
And he likes to read, which we know... You don't like to do.
No, I'm gonna
not for fun.
I'm gonna watch it. I mean, for fun. What kind of fun is that? Reading.
Talk to Greg. He apparently enjoys it
it's
quite a bit.
The worst fun I ever had. 7:58 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. Come hang with us if you want to get in here. Talk about this Astros. The Kendall Graveman. You're more than welcome to get in about that. You want to talk about our team, our Texans? Yes, of course you do. Our Rockets, we haven't really touched on that, but we will if you want on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Penalty on drunk Uncle Willie, unsportsmanlike conduct for hogging the couch.
Happy Thanksgiving from ESPN 97.5.